Emmy, what's the best thing about fishing around Jackson besides the fishing and besides the catching?
I mean, both those are really good, the fishing and the catching. Honestly, it's the diversity. And I kind of have a two parts to that. It's the type of water we get to fish and the fish we get to fish for in those waters. And you really can't beat it. You have the Snake River in Jackson that runs through the valley. You have all of its tributaries. I think I was counting up the ones that we at the store just divert people to. And I think there's at least 8 different types of tributaries that you can fish at different types of year that will fish differently, all before it meets Palisades Reservoir down in south of the valley. They all hold fish. They hold fish at different times of the year. So you really can, depending on if you're fishing early season, pre-runoff, or June, July, you can really fish at all different times, which is really cool. You also have alpine lakes, non-alpine lakes. You have your lakes in the park that fish really well at ice off, and many, many more creeks too that feed into those tributaries that require a little longer drive, but a little bit more hiking, a little bit more adventure. So there's so much diversity in the water. It's unreal. There's always water to fish, even in the winter. Usually people choose skiing over fishing just because can get cold.
Yeah.
But we are seeing more and more folks switching to looking at fishing in the winter and even approaching Trout's Bay so that they can keep one hand in their pocket and warm. And then they just have to swing.
Yes.
So we're seeing people get creative just so they can extend their fishing season a little bit longer. But then you also have different bugs in all those waters, different types at times that they hatch, different times that the fish are keying into different things. So you have, I mean, there's so much to do and it can always be changing. It's super dynamic. So you can really piece together a pretty incredible fishing season, fishing a bunch of different waters in a bunch of different ways. The second part of that is the fish that we get to catch and the fish that we get to target. Our beloved cutthroat trout comes in 4 subspecies, 4 flavors in our valley. And whether you're fishing in Jackson, accessing Eastern Idaho, Grand Teton, Yellowstone National Park, Southwestern Montana, and even the Connell Divide, just from Jackson, you have a lot of access points. And from there, you get to access a lot of different subspecies of cutthroat in their native ranges, in their native watersheds, which is really cool. And so there's even a thing called the Wyoming Cut Slam that if you catch all 4, you get a really cool little poster from the state and a little sticker. And so it really incentivizes folks to learn about these different watersheds, learn about these different ranges, learn about these different subspecies and what it takes to maintain a healthy ecosystem in each one. So that's really cool too. The 2 that we focus on the most probably out of the 4 are the Yellowstone cutthroat, which is up in Yellowstone and on the Continental Divide, so north of town. And then you have the fine spotted cutthroat, the Snake River fine spotted. It's a mouthful. Snake River fine spotted cutthroat, which runs through the valley, and just a really cool peppering of spots along the whole body, which is really cool. So two parts to my answer there, the fish we get to catch and the water we get to fish in. It's just, you can't beat it.
Nice. And then the wildlife out there is something else too.
Fishing. Yeah. It's really fun to be, enjoying the cool water, the quiet mountain air, and be like, oh, there's a bear upstream of me. keeps you on your toes, but it is really fun. We see all sorts of wildlife. And I think what's really cool is the birds of prey that we get access to as well, that we get to fish alongside. And it's a really neat, it feels very wild.
Yeah.
It feels very, very wild.
We just did an episode the other night of the wildness out there, of how it really is wild. It's not Disneyland.
Yeah.
Because it's not. I mean, it's just, there's some, even here, we're away when we're on the river here, but it doesn't feel like we're away like we are when we go out west.
Yeah. Which could be for better or for worse. It's a good thing if you do, or if you are seeking that getaway, but it's also easy to forget, if something goes wrong with my vehicle, with my body,
right,
with the wildlife, I'm far away and it's not easy to get to some of these places. So you do have to kind of user error, user own user management, risk management, make sure that you are prepared and have the tools and the information you need. I just took my WFR, which is Wilderness First Responder. And it was amazing how all the places I've gone without knowing that stuff. I'm like, oh, geez. this is good stuff to know.
you were quite the adventurer when you were here. Mm-hmm. And then out there, it's just a bigger space. But, you know, 4 miles is no different than 10 miles if you've got a broken leg, really.
Oh, yeah. And it's
hoping that someone will find you or, you know, something bad happens. There's really not much difference.
How easy it is to get dehydrated or to, Yellowstone's, in my opinion, the coldest place in the lower 48. I've experienced borderline hypothermia there on just an easy day.
Yeah.
More than I've experienced it anywhere else. And so it's easy to take it for granted how wild it is and how susceptible we are to the elements in some of these places.
So hypothermia kind of fits with our topic today, you know?
It sure does.
Well, let me go ahead and do a show introduction so we can get everybody lined up on who we're talking about and that sort of thing. So from high atop the world headquarters of Southeastern Fly, this is the Southeastern Fly podcast. Subscribe or follow wherever you consume your podcasts. If you find value in this episode and want to give back, just drop by the Southeastern Fly store at southeasternfly.com and then just simply make a purchase of a hat or a t-shirt and you get a free decal. So let's move on into the episode here. So who is our guest today? She's a friend of mine. We fished together several times when they lived in Nashville. Her work with bugs is very impressive, and it's quite extensive, to say the least. So when I met Emmy, she was working at a local outfitter called Cumberland Transit, working with Grumpy. He was like, hey, you need to meet this girl. And so I did, and just... She's a fishy person, but since then, she's moved out west and she's the store manager at Orvis in Jackson Hole. She's here to help us to talk about staying warm. Now, I hate to be cold. So this is going to be a good one for me, but please welcome to the podcast, Emmy Sorcy. Emmy, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks so much, David. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. And then, like I said, you know, we've been out in when it's kind of winter. Me and you and Ethan have been out fishing and it was kind of winter, but it's nothing like you're experiencing out there. But I think the reason why I wanted to have you on, or one of the reasons I guess I should say, is that you've experienced the cold humidity, you know, the southern winters, and then you've experienced the dry winters. And as far as keeping warm, I think you have a good rounded understanding of what we're talking about whenever most of our audience is in the South, but I think you can blend that with your knowledge of base layers to outer shells. And we kind of want to go, you know, in that direction here. But so when taking all that into account, what should we look for when we're deciding on warmth for, let's start with the outer shell and work our way in. Let's do that. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So your outer shell, it's going to be your first layer of defense. It's your protection from the wind, from the rain, from the snow, from the elements. And so it's really important to treat this piece, this step, even though I usually think about it last when I'm gearing up for the day, it's really important to treat it like a piece of gear. And so your hard shell is gear. It's like your fly rod, it's your reel, your boat bag, your boots, your waders, your rain shell, your wading jacket is a piece of gear. So treating it like a piece of gear, that goes for picking out one that's going to work best for you, but also in the care, which comes along with taking care of our hard shells. So you'll hear me say hard shell maybe more than you want to, but essentially what that means in the retail side of things is that waterproof layer, not to be confused with a soft shell, which is a windproof layer. So you'll hear those two things more on the back end retail side. I've been in retail a long time, so those two words are ingrained in my brain. But your wading jacket is technically a hard shell, which, kind of just reiterating, it's that the main goal of your outer shell is for protection. And so your first line of defense is pretty important, whether you're wearing it or it's stowed in your pack. It's going to be the part that also takes the biggest beating. So that's kind of where that treating it like gear, taking care of it, keeping it clean, keeping it retreated really comes in handy. You might not always need your hard shell right when you get to the river. It might not be raining if you're in the southeast. It might kind of feel warm, but as you're standing in the water, as you're standing on the boat and you're exposed to the elements, that rain shell, that windproof shell, that hard shell is going to be really important. And almost at the expense of sometimes I'll layer less underneath it just so I can make sure I have that protection shell on the outside. If I'm sticking my hand in the water, if I'm dripping water on myself, I don't want to soak through the layers that are underneath because those are really crucial to keeping my body temp where it needs to be. So I like to start with understanding what the hard shell does, what that wading jacket does. I think that's super important. And also kind of nerdy and also kind of fun. And so a good winter weight wading jacket has three components in my mind: room to layer, room to move. So it's not too tight. You can actually layer underneath it. When I fit folks in the store, that's what I'm looking for. Like, let's try on a jacket with it just to make sure you can layer underneath it. So your summer rain jacket, your summer wading jacket might be different, a totally different piece than your winter wading jacket, which is going to have a little bit more room.
Right.
It's also going to be waterproof and usually inherently windproof, especially if it's a true soft shell, which is more of a windproof layer. Usually wading jackets are more under that hard shell category. So hopefully it was the last time I use those two words. It's also going to be breathable, which is a really important word in both my cold, dry climate and my cold, humid climate, just because we create our own little ecosystems, especially once we start moving around. Or adrenaline gets pumping, or we just run warmer, we're going to sweat. And so something that's going to help breathe is going to be really important. So just because we're keeping the elements out and we're creating this membrane of keeping the elements out, but also letting our ecosystem that we're creating underneath the jacket with all our layers leave. And so it's a kind of a cool mechanism, a rain jacket or a wading jacket being that membrane. So water droplets are larger than your sweat droplets, water droplets in sweat form. So a good wading jacket is designed to keep those water droplets out from rain or snow, but to let the smaller sweat droplets escape. And because nature likes equilibrium, when you create this hot, humid ecosystem on the inside of your jacket and it meets the cold, dry or cold, humid ecosystem on the outside, it's going to pull that heat out. So it's something that's breathable. However, if you just run warm, if you're moving a lot or highly active, and sometimes you could create too hot and a humid climate for the rain jacket or that wading jacket to keep up. So that's something to keep in mind. And usually that comes down to how I layer. If I know I'm going to be doing a high activity thing, whether I'm going to be the one on the oars rowing or I'm hiking in and I know I'm going to be exercising a little bit more active, I'm going to make sure that I layer accordingly, because you don't want to start off sweaty. As soon as you sweat, it's game over for the most part. And so treating that wading jacket, understanding that it does have these micro pores, it's designed to let the hot, humid air that you're creating from your body heat out, but keep yourself protected from the rain that might want to come in, and keeping those layers underneath dry is super, super important for the next steps.
You were talking about retreating. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about there? I'm gonna tell on myself. My wading jacket is 5 years old, probably.
Okay.
It hangs in the back of my truck 24/7.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think it's ever been washed.
But, don't tell me that.
Yeah, it's probably time for a new one. Let's put it that way.
Wading jackets typically have, I usually say, I mean, 3 to 5 being generous, but a 3 to 5 year shelf life, whether it's sitting in a closet or you're wearing it on the stream, it's something that is I mean, unless you take really good care of it, you can keep it for a long time. I have one rain jacket I've had for 10 years and I just keep cleaning it, retreating it, and it's still going strong. But it is something that, I mean, it's like a fly line or a reel or a rod. You have to take care of it. You have to keep cleaning it, keep it serviced. You don't leave it in the back of your car for 5 years.
Okay. So how do I clean it? How do I treat it? I might do that. Or I might just get another one.
Spot cleaning, it's the easiest. So just once that dirt dries, making sure to brush the dirt off, thinking about those micro pores, dirt will clog them. Okay. And then you're going to jeopardize oils and with the oils from our fingers too, and the oils from our Aquel and anything that we're using on the river can get on there and kind of jeopardize those micro pores and water can get in, can start to kind of seep in. That's one thing, an easy test is when you're outside and you're wearing your wading jacket and instead of beating up, you're just seeing these dark wet spots. Then it's usually time to clean it, retreat it, throw it in the dryer, let it reactivate, let those chemicals reactivate. And then you should, once you get back on the water, you should see that water beat up again.
Okay.
So that's how you know it's doing its job.
Okay.
Yeah. And so there's a couple products I like. I really like Nick Wax's product. They have a, I think it's called TX Direct. There's a wash-in and then there's also a spray-on. Usually the first step is cleaning it, whether you're spot cleaning it and kind of brushing the dirt off, or even with a really, really light detergent or a detergent that's specific to rain gear and like the Gore-Tex membranes, washing that. And then you will usually spray on the tea extract or like product, and then it will retreat it, throw it in the dryer, and it's usually good as new. Then there's also an easy, so like if you don't want, you don't have to retreat it every single time you're using it, or a couple, I usually do it maybe once a season. I'm done with the season, I'll retreat it and store it treated, or vice versa. Right when I get it out for the season, I'll retreat it and it usually is good for the whole season. Something that's, if you kind of see it, if you had been wearing it a bunch and you see it starting to kind of pull in that moisture a little bit more versus beating it up on top, just throwing in the dryer and it will reactivate.
Oh,
those. Yeah. So that can be an easy, just freshen it up, throw it in the dryer, usually on like a lower heat. And then it can look at the tag, look at the instructions for the particular jacket. But usually it's pretty easy.
You want me to read instructions is what you're saying.
Well, they're not even usually words. They're usually little photos that you have to interpret. Okay. So you're like, what is this?
Yeah.
My dryer is not triangle. I'm not sure what you mean. but yeah, so treating it, like we clean fly line. Well, some of us might clean a fly line. Yeah. I know I do. I'm getting better about it, but it makes it perform better, makes the fly line perform better.
Yes, so true.
That'll plug to clean your fly line. and clean your, when you just have an afternoon of it, the rainy day, clean your fly line, clean your wading jacket, you're good to go.
Interestingly, when my fly line gets dirty, I just replace it.
Oh yeah, that is another.
But approach. I don't
we
do that
like
with the
that
jacket.
At the store level.
Yeah, you love me, I'm sure. Yeah, exactly.
We like that. But yeah, so I mean, your wading jacket, treat it like a piece of gear.
Yeah,
treat it, take care of it. It will take care of you.
Okay, I did this topic for everybody out there. Now I'm feeling like I'm getting taken to the principal's office. So. I should have never said that. Okay. All right.
It's true. I mean, it comes out. I get it. So, when I tell people at the store all the time, I'm like, okay. And then like in a year or so, wash it. They're like, you want me to what? I'm like,
yeah, right.
Well, you're investing in something. Rainy jackets are things you invest in.
True. And I kind of counted rain as a wash too, like a light wash, light cleaning. Yeah. So,
but then unless the sun comes out to a temp that's adequate towards a dryer, and then maybe you tumble down a hill or something that's not muddy, so you're not necessarily getting it dirty, but you're like tumble drying it. I think it's not the same, David.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna look at the pictures or the instructions, interpret the pictures, and do what you're talking about. Or
and I'm always phone a friend if you. Start with getting a new one, and then with the new one, just give it the best life it could ever imagine.
I thought I was doing that with my other one. but okay.
it's probably fine.
Yeah, yeah. It's still, it honestly, it still is beating up. The water's still beating up.
That's
on
amazing.
It. Yeah. It is, isn't it? But
yeah.
I mean, it sits in a hot car too. So maybe it's just constantly activating. That's what I'm going with. There we go.
Okay, I like it.
All right, we've got a good baseline on the outer layer. So let's move to the clothing between the outer layer and the base layers. Because I want to be warm, and I don't have to be fashionable. But some folks out there do want to be fashionable, and I get that. But I warmth is first. Let's go with that. So can you help us understand like the mid layer? I guess I'm calling it not the outer, not the base layer, but those inner layers there. And hey, if it's fashionable too, that's a bonus. So can you walk us through that?
Absolutely. So if you remember moments ago, your outer shell is your protection. Your mid layer is your warmth. That's where a lot of your warmth, that's main goal is warmth. And so it's going to be highly customizable, highly dynamic to what you're doing that day and how warm or cold you run as an individual, as an angler. And so this is where there's going to be a lot of subjectivity to what you're doing and the angler you are. So if you're rowing, you might go with a lighter layer. If you're hiking a bunch, you might go with a lighter mid layer. If you're just going to be standing in the front of the boat, standing in the water, you might go with a heavier layer. You might go with two layers. So the way that I break this down is naturally what comes next underneath your hard shell is some sort of insulation. And so that can be three things. That can be one or two, which is a down jacket or a synthetic insulation jacket. Or it can be three, which is fleece. So sometimes I'll wear like a down jacket and fleece on the really cold days. Sometimes I'll just wear a synthetic jacket when I know I'm going to be kind of highly active. It's not super cold. And then I might have a fleece in my bag. So this is going to be highly subjective. With the whole point here being warmth or being that insulation, holding that body heat in. So breaking down the two big materials, down and synthetic. Down is going to be your warmest option. It's usually going to be your lightest option and more compressible, so more packable. It's not going to be your most breathable option. Down is really warm. So those really, really cold days, down is what I usually grab. If I'm not going to be moving a bunch, I know I'm not going to be getting a sweat on intentionally.
Right.
Then down is usually what I grab when I'm going to be standing still or standing more dormant. If it the downside of down is that if it gets wet, typically if it's not hydrophobic, which if it's not waterproof, down, which is very expensive, but if it's not, usually it's not hydrophobic. When it gets wet, it loses its loft. So you lose your warmth. So down is really important to keep dry. It also does not dry super fast. So if you got a wet down jacket, I'd maybe take a snack break, go back to the car, take a moment, figure out if you have some extra layers, just because you're going to lose your warmth quick. And I've done the whole classic Magoob thing where I just like stick my hand in the water, down jacket gets soaked, and I have a wet arm the rest of the day. And usually that arm is very miserable, sending signals to my brain like, what the heck, man?
Yeah.
what are you doing to me? And usually my day gets a lot shorter.
Yeah.
So that's your down option. A synthetic is what I always would grab in the Southeast, just because it retains its warmth when it's wet, huge, because you're sweating, you're moving around, it's moist, it's humid. It's more breathable. So if you are more active, it's going to regulate with your body temperature more than down will. It's a good down alternative. So if you do have a down allergy, this is usually the one that I put people towards, steer people towards. It dries quickly. Nice. It's usually less expensive. It's usually a lot less expensive and it's easier to layer. Usually synthetic jackets have more of a tapered fit or can have a more tapered fit. And so it's a good option if you're going to be layering and highly active or tend to run a little warmer. So synthetics is a good option. It's like I said, I wear down a lot out here. Just because it's cold
yeah,
and right. I'm not usually moving around a whole lot, but like I ski in synthetic because it's going to be more breathable. It's going to handle, if it gets moist or wet, it's going to handle it a lot better without me losing my warmth. In the Southeast, I would gravitate towards synthetic a lot more. It was a staple in my closet. And so you kind of have two options there with that first kind of layer of insulation. You might not always need it, but you do have it if you do need it.
So, and so synthetic, mm-hmm. what is that? What are we talking about there? So I know down, I've got a down jacket. So
yeah, it's a synthesized alternative to down. So usually it's where down is these plumes, these feathers coming from duck or goose. Synthetic is a manufactured alternative that comes more in sheets. So like your Primaloft is going to be in sheets versus like a lofty down, which is where you get the warmth and the packability or the compressibility of down, is that, which is really nice. So you down is much easier to pack. And then you have, and synthetic's usually a little bulkier just because it's in these sheets.
So yeah, still puffy jackets. Let's just talk those. Those used to be, and I've got one, I've had it for, I think, longer than I've had my rain jacket, and it has been washed. Thank you very much, and clean, whatever.
It's That's been a taken good one to wash of. As well.
Yeah, but now I'm noticing that they're thinner, right? Than they used to. This is a big. I mean, I look like a blue Michelin man. I don't know if you remember Michelin tires has that white.
Oh yeah,
that's me. But I'm.
Is blue. It down?
I is think it is.
Down jacket.
Yeah, yeah. So, but now they're getting skinnier or thinner looking. Yeah.
Sure. So you have different densities of down. And so usually as you get more compressible, lighter weight, smaller to pack up, it's usually a higher density. So like usually smaller plumes of the down feather. Mm-hmm. And usually you see the price tag go up quite a bit, but it's a really nice jacket.
Yeah.
Just because you can pack it. The warmth to weight ratio is extraordinary. It's a lightweight jacket that still keeps you very warm. So that's why you're seeing usually it was like 600 down, which can be really bulky, very warm, but very bulky. Now you're seeing more like 800, 850. That's going to be a lot lighter, but still warm.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah. So that's where you're seeing as technology changes, they're able to make those edits to some cool gear pieces.
Yeah. Okay, now I'm looking for a new jacket now.
Yeah. And there's I have a big bulky down for certain scenarios, and then I have a really lightweight packable down that's more expensive for other scenarios. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of what I'm saying is there's a if you need an excuse for multiple jackets in your closet, I'm your gal. I can be
people
that voice of reason.
Yeah, right.
Synthetic jacket, bulky down, lightweight down.
Yeah.
Backup synthetic.
I can help you spend your money.
Yep. Let me help you spend your money. So down and synthetic both have a place in your closet. Synthetic is probably going to be what you gravitate towards most if you're in the Southeast. Down is a good alternative, especially for that jacket you have kind of stored away in your car for when you get back from the river and you're cold and you take off the synthetic and you put the big bulky down because now you're standing still and sitting in the car and trying to warm up. Down's a good option for that. So there you go. You have your car jacket and your river jacket.
Yeah, okay.
And your boat jacket.
And your boat jacket. My rowing jacket and your fishing
rowing jacket.
Would be two different things for me.
Okay. Monday jacket and your Tuesday jacket.
Yeah. I don't have to have one for pushing the boat off the trailer or winching it back up.
It'd be nice to have one for that too. You don't want to destroy your down jacket, so you need to have another jacket for that.
I see what you're doing to me now. Now I'm with you now.
But so you have synthetic and down. You also have fleece, which is another synthetic. It's going to be highly variable. Fleece comes in so many different shapes and sizes. It can be bulky. It can be lightweight. It can be pullover. It could be zip up. It can be everything. The nice thing about fleece is that it's breathable. And it's highly moisture wicking. It keeps you warm when it's wet, but it's not as packable. So depending on how, as you're getting ready for the morning and you have a good idea of what the weather's going to be and what you're going to be doing that day, what the objective is that day, usually I'll bring a insulation like synthetic or down, and then I'd bring a fleece. I might pack the fleece away. I might start with the fleece and then take the fleece off. But that can be, that's where you can get a lot of customizable, coming all back to this main goal for this category, this mid layer is warmth. So customizing it to what you're doing that day is very important.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out where, so fleece is not windproof for me at all, but you've got your outer layer for that. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. So your hard shell is going to be that windproof layer. Some fleece can be windproof, but it's usually going to have some sort of tighter woven knit on the outside, or it's going to be some sort of hybrid, which is going to make it bulkier and a little bit stiffer. Sometimes this is where I'll sneak in if I think it's going to be windy, and maybe I think I might have my rain shell on or my wading jacket on. I might not, or I just need an extra little barrier. I have a really light, true soft shell layer, true windproof layer that I'll sneak in like underneath my down or underneath my synthetic just to create another little membrane. Or if I'm trying to go less bulky, I'll choose like a very thin wind shell versus fleece, because I know I want to keep that wind off me. And I might be at jeopardy of being too hot with a fleece.
Right.
So sometimes you can customize this a lot. Really depends on the day and what you're going to be doing. Yeah.
Okay.
And this is where you're going to, if you shed layers or add layers, this is where I would do it. And I would put that wading jacket back on once you've settled with what you're going to wear. You're not changing your base layers while you're out there. So that's what you sign up for that first thing in the morning. And so this is where you're going to be changing those layers. So having some options, I even take some options with me to the river, leave it in the car maybe, or put it in the boat, just so if the weather does turn or maybe gets warmer, I can change this as I need to.
Okay.
With the whole goal being, and it's kind of aggressive, but I like it because I think there's some little secret truths to it. But there's the old saying that if you sweat, you die in the winter if you're outside.
Yeah.
So you need to be super proactive about maintaining and managing that sweat level with your activity. So really catching it before you start sweating, even if it means start bold, be cold, start bold. Some organization of those words about bold and cold and being there and starting. But as you want to start a little colder than you think you're going to be, anything you can do to help manage that sweat. Because as soon as you start sweating, it can be a matter of time. It can be dangerous. Can be your core temp on the line there. So
it's something else.
Making sure you manage that.
Something else to think about is you know, so we're going to talk about base layers here in a minute, which is one of my favorite things ever. But something to consider there is the car ride to the river. You know, you got the heat cranked up, you got heated seats, you know, all that stuff, and you're sweating because you're dressed for 30-degree, 40-degree weather. But you know, it's 70 in the car, and my rear end's on fire because I got the heated seats on. And then I jump out and I start working on getting the boat ready and meeting people and getting their fly rods all hooked up. And the next thing you know, I'm like, dang, it's cold out here. And they're not cold because maybe they didn't do that. So I've kind of been trying to tune that back, enjoying the heated seats and enjoying the heat a little more on my way home than I do on the way to the river. And absolutely, I'm still very cold natured. So everybody else is probably roasting.
Well, even just planning for that. So not putting, and I've learned this more in the ski world, just because you're going up to the ski hill and you've got the heat blasting, you've got your ski socks on, you got your ski layers on, your bibs on, it gets pretty warm, but then you start sweating and that's bad.
Yes.
Bad news bears.
Right.
So one of the things that I started doing, I got a tip from a friend from a longtime skier, is not putting your socks on that you're going to ski in or you're going to wade in until you're going, like you get there and you're changing it out, because your feet will start sweating and your socks will get moist. And then if you stick those in waders and boots, you're cold off the bat. No matter what you do,
right,
you're cold. You have the best socks on. You have the best circulation. Good job. But if you're starting with sweaty socks, then it's game over. So I have a change of socks. And I do that skiing. I do that fishing now, too.
So just
I wear my socks to the river. And then I take them off. And I put new socks on that are dry.
Right.
And start fresh.
That's a good tip there. Because you just keep your socks with your boots. Not for 5 years. Don't do that.
If you get 5 years out of socks, good for you.
I've got about 2 years out of a couple pair. And they're Orbis socks, too. I really... Yeah. And they're now they're house socks. But yeah, they're the ones that come up almost to my knees, which I really like. But
yeah,
I wear them to the river. So I'll stop doing that and just put them with my gear and treat those as, you know, something to put on at the river, like my boots and my waders and bibs and stuff like that. Okay, cool.
Yeah, you want to be bold. You want to start cold. You want to start dry. This is very important. Just because you'll never be able to manage that if you start sweaty or wet socks. If you spill coffee on your leg, it'll just kind of be hard to manage once you're out there.
So since we're kind of talking about socks, what about the base layer stuff? That technology has come a long way since whenever I was a kid and you had the white long johns, as they call them, and they were not warm. We lived in Michigan when I was a kid, and it was not warm. I mean, you could put 10 of those things on and still be cold. So base layers have come a long way. What about that?
Yeah, so base layers are, I think, your most important part to this equation. It's going to take some trial and error until you find what works for you, but it's going to be your most important part just because it's your moisture wicking. Its main objective is moisture wicking. And so your wading jacket is protection, mid layer is insulation warmth, and your base layer is moisture wicking. It's going to be your next to skin layer. It's going to be how your skin feels, how you feel, how you set yourself up for success. So I think it is absolutely your most important piece of this entire equation and doing it right. This is where if you do it wrong, you have a short day. You're looking at a short day out there.
Right.
If you do it well, you stay comfortable, you stay safe, you stay warm, stay dry. So kind of back to that whole, if you sweat, you die, this layer is where you manage that at the very beginning. So I really like natural fiber. So there's natural fiber and synthetic fiber. As we see in down and synthetic insulation, we see a natural and a synthetic in base layers. And so I swear by merino wool because its benefits to the things that are more cons that I can manage, it's just extraordinary. And so it's warmer on the skin. So if you do run colder, having a merino wool will feel warmer on the skin than a synthetic will. The synthetic will feel a little cooler. However, if you're one of our lizard people that run warmer and feel very warm all the time, even on a very cold day, then synthetic could be a good option just because you're not putting warm on warm. And so that's a way to manage that. However, so warm wool, warmer on skin, it's very breathable. It's moisture wicking. It's better with when it's wet. So if you are getting a light sweat or you do get it wet a little bit, it's going to maintain that warmth, even if it's wet. It's really incredible where it really shines, which maybe doesn't matter to everyone, but it matters to me, is that you can get multiple wears out of it. It's pretty odor resistant just based on the natural complexities of the fiber. And so you get to wear it. I'll wear a base layer all week and then I'll wash it on the weekend when I'm not using it. So you get a lot more wears out of it. So it usually, which is positive, and it doesn't get super stinky like synthetic can get very stinky.
Right. Exactly.
Everyone knows. So on the flip side, you have polyester, which is your synthetic fiber. Like I said, it's cooler on the skin. So if you do run warmer, it's a good option just so you're not putting a warm fiber on a warm body to start with. It can be a recipe for disaster. Synthetic can be a good option. If you run warmer, if you know you're going to be highly active that day, you can even gravitate, or it's not going to be that cold and you just need kind of that moisture wicking layer, because it does moisture wick well. It's pretty breathable. It's not as breathable as wool, but it's pretty breathable. It can be lighter weight than wool. Wool can be, unless it's blended with something, can kind of be a little heavy. It doesn't do well when it does get wet. So it is moisture wicking. It is pulling that moisture away, but it's not necessarily drying as quick as wool is. So it's not getting that moisture off of your body. It's just kind of wicking it out. So it's not concentrated in one spot.
Okay. Spreading out that moisture.
Yeah. So it's, okay. And it depends on the piece, of course. So lightweight ones may dry quicker, but it's definitely, wool shines in a lot of ways more in this capacity. Right. It's pretty poor at odor resistant too. It's not great at not being stinky. It gets pretty stinky pretty quick. And so managing that, because that can, not that it affects your fishing, maybe it does, because you're like, every time you cast, you're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Mayday. And so those are kind of the two fibers that really have most of the market right now in the base layer world. You'll see bamboo too, which is, bamboo's fine. Mm-hmm. I usually gravitate towards bamboo more in the summer,
right?
Just for like a little heavier layer, but merino wool and synthetic are going to be the two main ones in the base layer world. Never, ever, 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 ever wear cotton.
Right.
It's just got a lot going against it. It's poor warmth when wet, poor drying time, poor moisture wicking. It can be dangerous, and that's a really good rule of thumb to try to stay away from cotton when you're in the backcountry, or if you're fishing in more extreme conditions, stay away from that.
That makes
cotton,
total
those
sense.
Cotton blends.
Yeah.
So that's something that if we can all agree on something, I think that's the main, that's the main thing.
Yes.
So, and just kind of reiterating the moisture wicking being the main goal here. And so customizing it to what you're doing, being right under that sweating threshold at all times. And so, like I said, you won't really be able to adjust your base layer once you're out there. You'll have to go to your mid layers more to customize it if you are starting to sweat, but this can be a good baseline that, you know, okay, I always gravitate towards merino wool. I know it. I know what to expect of it. I know what my thresholds are. When I do get too hot, I have different weights of merino wools. On a really cold day, I have a weight that I gravitate towards that I know I won't sweat in. I know. And so you don't have as much here as in terms of, options like you would in fleece or your mid layers, but you're really confident and you know what you have. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. That's a ton of information right there. And I'm just thinking, as you're talking, I'm thinking of the ways I layer. Like yesterday, mm-hmm. It was in the 40s when we started. It was 70 midday. Mm-hmm. And the days are getting shorter now. And now it's, and you're in the shade some, so it's getting colder before we get to the ramp. So mm-hmm. I'm like layered up, layer down, layer down, layer back up, layer back up. And I was thinking through, there's a couple of things that I need to make adjustments on the base layers, more so than anything. The mm-hmm. merino wool is one I need to adjust there. I need to do better on the socks. So then that will be, I'm sure will be very helpful. Especially as you get older, your circulation isn't as good and your feet are the first to, mm-hmm. first ones to know that.
Sure. Well, and I always when I'm fitting boots and waders at the store and just in my own practice, it's hard because you think more socks, more warmth. Mm-hmm. But as you start to restrict that blood circulation in your boot, whether it's boots that don't fit properly for winter application or it's too many layers of socks, as soon as you restrict that blood circulation, your feet are cold, way colder than they would be if it was just an elemental thing, if it was just cold water, cold air. And so that's something, trust your body, trust yourself, try to go a little lighter on the socks, be a little bit more strategic on the socks. Even if you're like, oh man, I only have one pair of socks on, my feet are definitely going to get cold. Trust it, trust the process. And if you got more blood circulation and you can wiggle your toes more, ultimately your feet will probably be warmer. So okay. Something too that I picked up from moving out west and skiing in the winter, I used to go with a really chunky fleece line sock, but my feet would get colder. Like, why? I'm wearing a really big sock. What's going on here? These are defective. And as soon as I switched to just a liner, my feet are so much warmer. So it's reverse psychology a little bit. But the big thing there is just if you got to have good blood flow, whether you're young, whether you're old.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, does it? Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
And I've got a pair of moisture wicking socks too. Mm-hmm. That I put. They're super thin.
I like merino wool here as well. The big thing is definitely don't do cotton. Merino wool is a great sock option. It's really easy to find a good merino wool sock. They're all over the place.
Right.
And so that's one that I don't think they do synthetic socks as much. I don't think they do. They might. There's probably someone out there that makes a synthetic sock, but everything I know is some sort of merino wool blend. It might have some elastic or some polyester in there just to give it some better shape.
Right.
But that's a pretty easy thing to find in that natural fiber. And no questions asked, I would always gravitate towards a merino wool sock over anything else.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just having that backup pair, being able to start with a fresh pair of socks that aren't crusty, that aren't wet, that aren't sweaty, and then sometimes I stick my socks that I'm going to wear for the day on my heater. Mm-hmm. So I put them on and they're really warm, but they're dry.
Yeah.
That's the biggest difference.
And you were talking about trusting yourself, wearing a little thinner sock. I mean, socks are something you could just stick in your pack and, all right, mm-hmm. I'm going to go out. I'm going to do what Emmy said. I'm going to go out and try this. But if it becomes a problem, I've got my backup pair or another pair to put on. And I can just stop and, you know, and just do that. Get out of the water for a minute. And yes, it'll be a little cold, but in the end, it'll be better. So, socks are, it's not like I'm taking a duffel bag full of something. Just take an extra pair of socks.
If you took a duffel bag of something, take a duffel bag of socks.
Yes. That's exactly. Change them out every 30 minutes. Yeah.
Your friends will look at you like, just classic David over here with his duffel socks.
He's a little cold natured.
Socks every hour.
So, We covered from outer to inner. We've done all that. We've had a couple of little good nuggets in here too that are, you know, just things you should do. But what's the one question we didn't ask about keeping warm in winter gear that we didn't ask? What's the one thing we should have asked?
So all the accessories. And so with the big one being gloves. So just before we get to gloves, because that's a huge topic, mm-hmm. and a controversial one, just because it does bring in the health of the fish, you don't want to. Well, we'll get there in a second. But so I like a buff to cover my mouth. If it is cold air, your body will have to work a lot more if you're just breathing cold air in, and it'll take a lot more energy to warm that air up. So having a buff that you can cover your mouth, keep your neck warm, is huge. Even if you just leave it around your neck, just having your neck warm is huge. Hats keep your body heat in. So we lose a lot of body heat from the top of our heads. And so having a comfortable hat there can also be a safety thing. Like we wear ball caps in the summer, wearing some sort of hat can keep hooks out of our noggins and ears and eyeballs and everything like that. So those two are important, whether I have them on or if I take them with me just in case. Those things are really nice to have.
Absolutely.
Gloves is a tough one. It's something that I haven't found quite my solution for me yet with it, because I end up having like fingerless gloves on that I wear. And then I do the classic move of, oh no, I dropped my something in the water, reached down with the glove. Now I have a wet glove. Like it happens every time.
Yes.
So they are not dry for very long. And anyway, so I do like the gloves that can convert to fingerless just so you can get your dexterity. I like to start with them. Whether I keep them dry is up to how I'm feeling that day. But fleece is a good option here. Merino wool, like a knit glove, is a good option. However, as soon as you handle the fish, if you're handling the fish, then you need to take them off. Just because the fish, the oil on the fish is so important to their survival and their protection against their elements. It's their little wading jacket. And so you want to keep those oils on there, and a fingerless or a fingered fleece glove coming in and wiping that off is just tough. Just as we wet our hands before touching the fish in the summer. In the winter, typically you might not even want to touch the fish because that involves getting your hands in the cold water. So you might just net them, unhook them, let them go.
Yeah.
Totally fine. But the big thing there is not handling the fish with a fleece or a knit glove. One thing you can do, and a lot of folks who fish in the winter out here do, I haven't hopped on this train yet, but I think it's a great option, but like a nitrile glove. So one of those really lightweight nitrile, like black gloves, just because it helps. It doesn't strip the fish of their oils, or at least it's a little bit more gentler on the fish. And so they'll wear those, put a fleece glove over it, so they have a nice barrier membrane, keeping their hands dry. And then once they need to touch the fish or stick their hands in the water, they take those fleece gloves off. So that's a good option too. A lot of folks are starting to do that.
Okay.
As on a rainy day, on a cold day, as a backup, just is a good rule of thumb. Yeah. And or you can get into trout spay and just keep that hand in your pocket.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Never have to worry about it.
And keep a hand warmer in there with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very clutch thing, is keeping hand warmers in your pocket, because then you're like, you forget about them and you stick your hands in your pocket, you're like, ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
that's a great idea.
Yeah, that's a great idea. But so having that nitrile glove underneath, I see a lot of folks doing that, and that seems like a really good option or alternative.
Okay.
Or just raw dog it and just get your hands wet, get your hands cold. Usually that's a bad idea.
Terrible idea for me.
You might have just really warm hands. So good on you if that's the case.
Right.
I think the other, so gloves is a big thing. You waterproof gloves, like a neoprene glove, is a good option, but there's just some limits there. There's some limits to what you can do, where you can put your hands. So it's something that I could see you having to remove often as well.
Yeah.
But that's an option too. You just, same thing there. You don't necessarily want to touch the fish if you can avoid it. And maybe that's just the better rule of thumb, is just don't touch the fish in winter.
Yeah.
Don't do that to yourself.
Yeah.
But so waders and boots, that's kind of something else that I thought that is important. Waders are a must have in the winter if you're wading, because it's keeping the water out. Something that I started doing, not when I'm wading, but when I'm on the boat, because wearing waders on a boat can kind of be a safety issue. It can keep the water out if you're going to be getting out in the water. But if you fall in, it's just can be bad. And so I've actually been wearing a pair of bibs and like a tall muck boot.
Yeah.
And that keeps the elements out, keeps my base and mid layers dry. But if I do fall in, I'm not taking on water.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of a nice option with the waders, as you would in the summer and any other time you wear your waders, always wear your wading belt. It's a fashion statement. It can make you look like you have tiny little waist, but it's also a safety.
It's a safety thing.
It's a big safety piece. And so layering accordingly, when you have more layers on, making sure you still can get a nice snug fit with that wading belt. So you might have a different pair of waders that you wear in the winter. If you've have a little bit more fitted pair of waders for the summer, or just making sure that you're adjusting that to your winter weight, to your winter layers.
Yeah.
Because that's really, really important, especially in the winter.
Yeah, I'm on the muck boot and bibs train right now too.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And the muck boots, mine have some insulation in them too. Whereas my wading boots don't. My waders do a little bit. The neoprene booties have, you know, everybody's got those, but it feels like I'm warmer with the muck boots, and they'd be easier to kick off if you had to kick them off, you know.
Yeah, 100%.
Bogged down. Yeah, so.
Yeah. Bibs are, it's a life-changing piece of gear.
Even
through the summer on a rainy day, not having to throw your waders on, especially if it's cold and humid, it's a little bit more breathable, much more breathable option.
Yes.
I love my bibs.
Yeah,
I think I've worn my bibs a lot more than I've worn my waders this year, just because I'm in the boat a lot more.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I'm not wearing I'm not wearing my waders if I don't have to.
Exactly.
What do you think I am?
That's a great piece of gear right there for sure.
Yeah. So that's a solid one. A couple other things, if we have the time, some cold weather tips. So if you aren't in the cold a lot, these are some good things to know. And it works in the Southeast, Midwest, West, everywhere. They're just good things to know. And I'll just start with the elephant in the room. Pee often. If you have to pee, go pee. If you are holding on to a full bladder, it's going to pull all of your energy towards your bladder and make you colder, make your extremities colder. So just bear down, go do it, go relieve yourself. You will be so much warmer if you are staying regular when you're outside in the cold. Yeah. Another thing is small spaced out snacks. If you take on a big meal or something that's harder to digest, all that energy, all that blood is going to your stomach to help with that and making you colder. So kind of just spacing them out, maybe not grabbing something that's really, really high protein when you need to be the warmest. Maybe start with something, give yourself some time to start digesting it so that your body can go back to focusing on keeping you warm. And then keep moving, even when it's hard. I'm really bad about not, I'm like, as soon as I get cold, right, I like freeze up and I'm like, don't move. Then I'm like, no, I need to move. Yes. So making sure you have enough room in your finger, in your gloves, in your boots to keep moving. Avoid sweating. Just be proactive, be cold, like run the risk of being cold and dry versus cold and wet. You're going to be outside for so much longer. You'd be able to stay outside for longer. If you do that, listen to your body. There's shorter days. The sun goes away a lot quicker than we are used to fishing in the summer. And so avoiding getting stuck with the sun going down, just because that temperature is going to drop very quick as soon as that sun goes away, wherever you are. And then something that I like to do as well is take warm water in my insulated water bottle. And so same thing there, same ideas, covering your breath so that you're warming up your breath before your body has to necessarily warm it up. Drinking warm water will actually hydrate you a lot quicker because your body won't, and it also feels really good, but it also, your body won't have to work as hard to warm that water up if you're drinking cold water. And so you can kind of just keep your energy where you need it, keeping your toes and fingers and nose warm. Dry clothes in the car, warm shoes in the car, something you can change out of, change a sock, and then watch for drift ice. I don't know, it probably you have some really cool days out east that you have some drift ice forming that's breaking free, but it can be, I've had a couple of where I thought I could play chicken with the drift ice and it's pushed me out of the way every time. So just watch out for that. Watch out. Don't take any unnecessary risks that you don't have to, just because you're the outcomes are way more extreme in the winter. Dealing with hypothermia, dealing with just tricky situations. So there's not as many people out on the river, so you don't have as many resources. They might be harder to get to if you do need to get someone to perform a rescue. So just being smart about that is, I'm really bad about getting hyper focused when I'm fishing. I just got back from the jungle and I had to have a guide every 30 minutes telling me to put sunscreen on my feet and keep drinking water, because I was just like fishing. Like this could be my 80 centimeter. This could be my 80 centimeter peacock bass. And so it's hard to take care of yourself when you get really hyper-focused, but it's really important. It's whether you're in hot climate or cold climate, it's really important to remember safety's first. You want to be able to go out there again. You want to have all your fingers and your toes. You want to have fun. You don't want to be out there if you're miserable.
Stay in the middle of the boat. Stay in the center of the boat. That's another thing. Stay in the brace. Don't get out of the brace.
Listen to your fishing guide.
Yes. I'll tell you something else for folks that, for me, I keep a pair of mittens with me in the boat. I row with mittens. I found a pair that work really good and have grips on them and everything. So it's not like it's coming out of my hand or anything. So I keep those in that. And then I keep those hand warmers too. So
hand warmers, that's something that's always in my, my boat bag, even in the warmer months, just having something just in case you start to get cold or have someone who's starting to get cold. And it's a little gift of warmth that goes a long way sometimes. Yes. Two things you don't have to, but it's kind of a nice idea, especially if you aren't super mobile or you just want to take, if you're going out and fishing alone, I really like those hip belt inflatable life jackets in the winter. Yes. Just because rocks can be slick. You could be standing and then your feet can go right underneath you. Drift ice could come down. So something that you could like pull and save your life could be a nice thing, or could give your folks at home a little bit insurance, reassurance that you're going to be safe out there. And so that's kind of a nice thing to plug in. Also, don't be afraid to fish in the winter, just because it is a little bit more strategic, a little bit more planning going into it, potentially a little bit more uncomfortable. Trout are always feeding. And so they're going to slow down, but there's some really fun fishing, really fun hatches in the winter. The thing that I will say, if it's really cold, and for the trout's sake, on the days that it's really, 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 really icy cold, go skiing, stay home, play board games. It's you have to think about the trout as well. Just because you know you can keep yourself warm, it's still a shock to the trout system and a lot of energy when they do get hooked up and you're fighting a fish. They expend a lot of energy. So that kind of helps too. If you are like, if you go get, and you're like, okay, I'm going to go out these days. I saw David went out this day, so I'm going to go out this day. It can give you a little bit of a pause and be like, okay, what's going to be the best day, the safest day for me, and what's going to be the safest day for the fish? So kind of go fishing, but also don't just go fishing to go for the sake of going fishing in the winter. Think about the fish. And so what, keeping them
and when you pull the fish out of the water on a below freezing, and I've been out in the 20 degree days, and I've been out at the coldest I've ever been out is 6 degrees.
Oof.
Yeah, no wind though, so it was much much better than what I thought it was going to be. But
it was, if it was humid, it probably felt like -35. So
yeah, right. But but when you pull a fish out of the water and it's -6 degrees or 6 degrees or 10 degrees, I mean, they'll you keep them out of the water for a while, they'll be frozen. You know, they'll their gills will freeze, and it's hard on the fish. So definitely something to think about.
Something to think about. And I mean, think about, you don't want to run a winter marathon and then as soon as you're done, have your head dunked in water. So kind of think about the vice versa for the fish, is they're surviving out there too. They're trying to save energy. They're moving slower. Their metabolisms are slowing down. They're choosing food that's going to cost them the least amount of energy. So when we get them hooked up, getting them in quicker, and then keeping them in the water when you can, and just avoiding the really, really cold days altogether.
Yeah. Long hemostats. I've got a pair of long hemostats in the boat, and I'll use those.
Yeah. Or even those hook removers where you just slide it down the line and can unhook them right there in the water, keep them in the net, release them, then they go on to see warmer months.
Right, right. Yeah, catch them when they're bigger.
Yep. Exactly. Absolutely.
We say we close this thing out. I think that was a ton of good information in me. I really do. Yeah. All right. Share the podcast with your family and your friends and your fishing partners, and subscribe or follow so you'll be the first to know when an episode drops. If you find value in the podcast, there's some value in this one for sure, and you want to support the work we do on these episodes, just drop by the southeasternfly.com, click on the store and make a purchase of a hat or a t-shirt, and we'll give you a free decal too. So who was our guest today on this episode of Southeastern Fly? She's a friend of mine from several years back, a really good angler. Really, as you could tell, she's knowledgeable about the subject. She probably knows more about bugs than any one person I know. She is very knowledgeable about them. I'll just put it that way. And she just dropped some useful information on keeping us warm too, which I really appreciate, Emmy. You can find her at Orvis in Jackson Hole. Emmy, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks so much, David. It was a pleasure.
You just listened to Emmy Sorcy on winter gear on Southeastern Fly. See you next time.